Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. This is Phantom Nation, an internet radio program selling Phantom Nation, a book whose subtitle is Inventing the Palestinians as the Obstacle to Peace. It's available on Amazon in a Kindle ebook or two-volume hardcover box set, or ask your local bookstore to order some copies. More than one reader has said every pro-Israel person must read this book. Well, today's podcast will deal with the two-faced pro-Israel Jews in the diaspora, who, for example, on a Monday can defend Israel's right to exist and to fight back when attacked, but on Tuesday, when it comes to the future of Judea and Samaria, they can't even say Judea and Samaria. That's how fashionably anti-Jew they are. They call it West Bank. They are fashionably anti-Jew in this regard. They identify as Zionists, but unlike classical Zionists before the state arose, who claimed rightful ownership of all of the promised land described in the Bible, these peacocks today preen themselves in favor of a Judenline Judea and Samaria, what they call the West Bank, which my book and this podcast shows is the best evidence ever exposing the fantasy of an indigenous Palestinian people. For unlike all truly indigenous people, the Arabs here never had a name for this 60-mile-long chain of hills. And the reason the diaspora Jews support Israel's right to exist but take this position of a Judenline, Jew-free Judea and Samaria is their need to be accepted in politically correct society, inside the Beltway, in jobs, in government, journalism, lobbying. Last March, for the first time in history, AIPAC, so-called Israel lobby, took the position, genial, not to the Trump administration, but the previous administration led by the Muslim communist Obama and the Vietnam-era traitor John Kerry. This was the first time, I believe, in AIPAC's history since the mid-50s, it did not back the Israeli government, which has never given more than unbelieving, insincere lip service to this insane fantasy of handing the high ground taken in 1967 back to the Arabs. AIPAC did support this. It was, I'm afraid, another symptom of the shrinking of the non-religious American Jewish community. When two leading American Jews, as we shall see, support the two-state solution, they support the enemy position, who has always explained to their own people that the two-state solution, so-called, would be nothing but the first stage of the two-stage plan announced by the PLO in 1974, the first stage being the creation of such a state, the second stage being the destruction of Israel using the platform of the new so-called Palestinian state. And we'll get started after the following message from Israel News Talk Radio.
Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
Shalom from the heartland of Israel. This is David HaIvri. Join me every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 o'clock Eastern, for A Hebrew in the Heartland on Israel News Talk Radio. Hear the news and views from the heartland of Israel every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time. Be there.
Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. This is Phantom Nation, an internet radio program advertising Phantom Nation, the book whose subtitle is Inventing the Palestinians as the Obstacle to Peace. It's available on Amazon in a Kindle ebook or two-volume hardcover box set, or ask your local bookstore to order some copies. More than one reader has said every pro-Israel person must read this book. It's a great read because the story of Israel is a great read. Always a focus of world attention. It tells the story of the birth of this generation's principal lie about Jews. Every generation has them. And this is what Jew hatred has always produced, whopping lies about the perfidious Jews. You know, for ages, Roman Catholic priests in their pulpits on Good Friday were required by their church superiors to deliver a sermon called The Perfidy of the Jews. And in our time, the central lie is called Palestinian nationalism. It is this generation's mutant form of Jew hatred, otherwise known by the anti-Semitic word anti-Semitism, which word is inherently anti-Semitic in itself for its dishonesty. The concept of anti-Semitism was invented by the same post-Christian 19th century intellectuals who postulated race theory, and that redefined the Jews as no longer a nation, a people scattered to the four corners of the earth, but a race. This was the age of Charles Darwin and the heyday of the academic pursuit called anthropology and the scientific study of religion that debunked religion. Having lost faith in Christianity, and therefore a good reason for hating Jews because they're all guilty for crucifying their own Messiah, these post-Christian intellectuals nonetheless were most uncomfortable in the presence of Jews, if no longer guilty of deicide, so they dreamed up the idea that the Jews were not a nation but a race, even though because we were scattered around the world, we are arguably the most racially mixed nation on earth. This is why the United Nations Organization, the nations united around no other issue in the world as they are around perfidious Israel, calling it the most racist country on earth. Read all about it in Phantom Nation. It's the second day, Kaf Gimel B'Chodesh Elul, Parashas Nitzavim, Tavshin Ayin Ches, 5778. The first day, Monday, 3 September 2018, podcasting from Israel after 70 years of being afflicted by diaspora Jews who, in their arrogance and cowardice, are two-faced Zionists. Israel's friends and enemies simultaneously. Israel bashing has been common since Israel was born at Mount Sinai. Our sages noted that the very name Sinai could be translated to mean my hatred, meaning when the children of the Israelites accepted my Torah, capital M, people are going to hate you. They really hate me, capital M, but will take it out on you. Chosen people is meant to be unique in world history, and one of the standout characteristics, I think, is the ungodly percentage of anti-Jew Jews in this people, a.k.a. in our time liberals and leftists, Reform Jews, conservative Jews, religiously and politically. Every nation has its traitors, but I imagine none suffers from so many. In about the year 100, the classic Jewish prayer called the 18 Blessings was modified, and a 19th clause was inserted that was uniquely not a blessing, but the opposite. I have here Rabbi Jonathan Sacks' Koran translation, and it reads of this 19th clause, quote, "For the slanderers, let there be no hope, and may wickedness perish in an instant. May all your people, capital Y, people's enemies, swiftly be cut down. May you, God, swiftly uproot, crush, cast down, and humble the arrogant. Swiftly in our days, blessed are you, Lord, who destroys enemies and humbles the arrogant," close quote. And the reference here is to anti-Jew Jews. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks entitled this clause in his prayer book, Against Informers, and in his commentarial footnote added, quote, "The original object was the sectarians that split the Jewish world during the late Second Temple period," close quote, which description I find a bit too polite. He is British, after all. In the Nusach Ashkenaz version of the prayer book, there is no reference to the sectarians, the Minim, but there is in the Nusach Sfarad and Chabad versions, and for sure one of the hostile sects in mind at the time, perhaps the most hostile, were the Christian Jews, as scholars call them today. The first Christians were all Jews, living in Eretz Yisrael for about a century in their campaign to de-Judaize the religion. They were perceived to be enough of a threat to trigger the composing of this major change in our liturgy, in our major prayer. The insertion of this 19th clause was meant to drive the slanderers from the synagogues by inserting language they could not speak. And in the end, after these Christian Jews truly betrayed the country they were born into, the people, by siding with Emperor Hadrian and his Roman barbarians during the Bar Kokhba revolt of 132-135, thereafter they became a persona non grata in Eretz Yisrael. And so they turned their attention to converting the Gentiles and the rest of the world to spread the new faith, claiming it to be the next and authentic stage in Judaism, which meant you don't have to circumcise your sons anymore, and you can eat pig meat to your heart's delight. Today, in the diaspora, the Jewish people can be divided between defenders of Israel and attackers of Israel, who come in a variety of flavors. There's some mix and match here. One kind is the classic, functionally deranged anti-Jew Jew like a Peter Baynard or Thomas Friedman, for whom Israel is the guilty party in the conflict, denying the putatively prehistoric Palestinian people their ancient right to their state and their ancient homeland, just like the Jews. But then on the other side of the political spectrum, there are Americans of Jewish extraction who do not live Jewish lives but do defend Zionism, the creation of the state of Israel, but at the same time, they bash Israel for never retreating from Judea and Samaria, and worse, allowing religious Jews to live in Judea and Samaria, when all enlightened people foresee that terrain as the future of Palestinian state. Alan Dershowitz is one such American who stopped living as a Jew in his teens, if I remember from his first self-celebrating book called Chutzpah. He had been raised an Orthodox Jew attending Yeshiva of Flatbush, but ultimately rebelled against the faith of his fathers. But, like others, he substituted secular Zionism for the religion that he rejected. And in such a Jew's mind, he makes up for the betrayal. But he has not. Like millions of other Jews in America, Alan Dershowitz's son married a Gentile woman, and thus is participating in the demographic Holocaust that's been going on there for the last half century. Dershowitz can energetically defend Israel's right to exist and fight back against violence against it. He can do that on a Monday, but on Tuesday he will oppose the settlements in what he probably calls the West Bank. For sure, Martin Peretz, a former professor of political science at Harvard and former editor of the New Republic magazine, uses that name to bash the religion of Jewish people in general, especially the ultra-Orthodox, but in particular, national religious Jews, who live in what he calls the West Bank. Last Wednesday, the New York Times ran an opinion piece by him entitled, "The West Bank Model is a Failure," and never mind, there is no such thing. Peretz is not an Israeli. He made his life in Cambridge, Mass., and Washington, D.C. He knows less about this country than he thinks. To his credit, as editor of the New Republic, he was the last of the important editors in liberal journals to resist the Israel bashing that became fashionable starting in the 1970s. But, like Alan Dershowitz, in order to remain in good odor among the Gentiles, he too opposes those of us that he called, and I've never seen this locution before, called us West Bank Jews. And this is simply not a term in use among us Jews who live in what he calls the West Bank. And because his vocabulary is the same one the enemy invented, his refusal to be a proud Jew and call Judea, Judea, he exposes his underlying anti-Jewism, his siding with the enemy of the Jews in this matter, his underlying fashionable Israel bashing. Hating us Jews in Judea and Samaria is this generation's politically polite and correct way of doing that. No more deicide charge, no more Christ killer charge, no more vampire who needs Gentile blood to make matzah. Today the Jews are judged in the 47-member UN Human Rights Council to be the world's worst offenders of human rights for our daily crucifixion of our Palestinian victims.
Shalom, everybody. Making a difference often takes just one moment and one person at a time. I'm Orly Benny Davis, your show host on Israel News Talk Radios from Jerusalem with love. You'll be hearing people talking about politics, religion, social issues, and making a better tomorrow. Join me, Orly Benny Davis, for God and Country. From Jerusalem with love.
Wednesdays on Israel News Talk Radio.
Yes, indeed. The topic is Alan Dershowitz and Martin Peretz and really all the Jew boys in the State Department, little Tommy Friedman at the New York Times, Jeffrey Goldberg at the Atlantic. They're all what I call IBJs. An IBJ is an inside-the-beltway Jew. It's a fact of professional life in Washington that an American Jew who wants to work inside the beltway in politics, journalism, publishing, he and she must pledge allegiance to sneering at the Jewish communities in Judea and Samaria as the obstacle to peace. And there, last week in the Times, was a piece by Martin Peretz slandering what he contemptuously calls the West Bank Settlement Project, which only exposed his ignorance because there's no such project with that name. He sees a sinister Jewish drive to occupy more land belonging to the allegedly ancient Palestinian people when we settlers see it as just more Jews moving into the neighborhood, bothering no Hamite, dispossessing no Ishmaelite. Last week, the Jerusalem District Court ruled a settlement was legal, a revolutionary judgment here, and once again, the New York Times carried a picture of this settlement in question, Mitzpeh Karmim, which, like all photos of disputed Jewish communities in Judea and Samaria, showed prefabs and cottages surrounded by absolutely barren, undeveloped, rocky land. Every picture of these settlements the enlightened in our time see as an illegal land grab, it's always a few buildings surrounded by barren, rocky, untilled ground. The structures themselves were erected on barren, rocky hilltops. In other words, not one ancient Palestinian was dispossessed from his ancient sod, driven from his home by the heartless Jews. We never see orchards and olive groves, fruit trees, vineyards that originally belonged to the ancient Palestinians now being worked by settlers who stole these developed lands from the ancient ones. For this allegedly venerable Palestinian people, working the land, originally flowing with milk and honey, was something they were never interested in. Only after the Jews settled down on the unused wasteland and made it green again did the Arabs here fall in love with their ancient patria that they have cared so much about. Worse, Martin Peretz and all the other post-religious Jews who use the term West Bank do not know, see, that there is no greater proof than this name, that there never was a Palestinian people here, let alone one with identical and independent rights to a state like the Jews. They claim to be the indigenous people, but why then did they never name this chain of little mountains worthy of the Catskills? That's a name the Dutch came up with, I think. Indigenous peoples everywhere give names to natural features in their countries, like mountains, rivers, forests. In 1947, the UN Partition Plan referred to these hills as, fasten your seatbelts, Judea and Samaria, because those were the names imprinted on maps for centuries on end. As my book lays out, the name West Bank came into common use only after the Six-Day War. West Bank was the name given by the Jordanians when, without any UN sanction, they invaded Judea and Samaria and held on to it for two decades. They called it the West Bank of Jordan because they had no name for this terrain. Marty Peretz's vocabulary gives him away as a traitor to the Jewish people. Who is he to say Jews should not be living in Judea? What could be so terrible about more Jews coming to live in Judea? Peretz's West Bank should be, in his eyes, Judenline. In his mind, no Jews allowed. The West Bank has become the last place on earth outside of Islam where it is virtuous to deny Jews residence. Peretz likely thinks like Dershowitz, who I have heard say in opposition to the settlements, more or less, I paraphrase. But if you build settlements, there is no hope for the two-state solution. You know, the divine messianic two-state solution? Which armchair Zionists like these two believe. They believe in it more than the right of Jews to live in Judea and Samaria and restore Jewish life to these hills that meant so little to the Muslims they never even had a name for them. I once heard Dershowitz explain, again more or less, I paraphrase, yes, Israel has the legal right to live in Judea and Samaria, but what is more important is peace with the Palestinians, the victims of Zionism. More important than Jewish rights is peace with them. And Israel would do well to forfeit its right to live in Judea and Samaria so that peace can break out. By not upholding the greatest value, which is peace, Israel chauvinistically is demanding particular Jewish rights. So Israel brands itself a greedy nation that cares more about itself than peace. Jewish nationalism in this configuration is an obstacle to peace. In my book, I quote a Quaker anti-Semite telling a Jew after the Six-Day War that for the sake of peace, Israel just might have to be sacrificed. Peretz, who I used to praise for keeping the new republic pro-Israel when it was no longer fashionable among his fellow liberals, in this piece, destroyed my respect for him for calling the recent nationality law here, quote, odious, which means hateful, hateable. This is nothing but prostituting oneself for the love of the Gentile in-crowd. I don't know how Martin Peretz spends his summers, but I know Alan Dershowitz does on Martha's Vineyard, dining on the best non-kosher cuisine with the in-crowd. Martha's Vineyard is for Alan Dershowitz, the promised land, not Judea and Samaria. Peretz exposed himself no less, as no strategic thinker, in his ugly hostility to the Jewish religion. That's the political, communal, and religious ideology that kept this people afloat for thousands of years in the sea of time, when all the peoples Jews lived among sank beneath the waves. Peretz sees in us settlers, quote, a small minority trying to make Israeli society as a whole resemble the model of the Israeli government in the territories, close quote. The territories. Once again, his mouth cannot pronounce the Jewish names of Judea and Samaria. Like leftists in Israel, he refers to them as the territories. It's true, we are a small minority, we West Bank Jews, but he believes we lead the government around by the nose for our own messianic, his word, aspirations. This too is classic anti-Jew language, popular among the anti-religious leftists here. But Peretz is an American armchair Zionist and does not know this country as he should. More than a dozen years after the retreat from Gaza, and the wrecking of the homes and lives and livelihoods of 10,000 Jewish people, the behavior of the Muslims there since 2005 has had every sober Jew thinking that a similar retreat from Judea and Samaria would be insane. And for reasons having nothing to do with the Jewish religion or the presence of us Jews living here. The State of Israel drove all those Jewish families from their homes in Gaza that they had every right to live in, and did so hoping that the Muslims in the Strip after the withdrawal would smile at us and become our good friends and neighbors. But as everyone knows, if not Martin Peretz, that's not what happened. And the thought of abandoning Judea and Samaria to the same Arab Muslims as we see in Gaza is simply insane. Peretz complained, quote, the Jewish minority enjoys a monopoly in the West Bank of civil, political, and social rights, and its supremacy is guaranteed by the presence of a large military force from Israel to protect it and its privileges. This isn't even the worst of it. The Jewish minority in the West Bank enjoys a Western standard of living by nearly every measure, income, education, infrastructure, etc. Close quote. Peretz says that the Arab majority manifestly, quote, has no realistic hope of closing the gap, but in a nod to his own sobriety, he blamed, quote, corrupt Palestinian authority for that. It's hard to know what exactly was bothering Peretz by these well-known facts that Israeli Jews in general live better than Arab Muslims next door in Jordan, in Syria, in Egypt, in Iraq. Why should it be any different in Judea and Samaria? Israel is not responsible for the lower level of education, creativity, and enterprise among the Arabs. And as for the presence of the army in Judea and Samaria, they're needed not only to defend us, but the people in Tel Aviv. It's only a few miles away. Defend us from these violent savages. One has lost count of the number of times in the 20 years and counting yours truly has lived here, I have had to go to a funeral after an Arab attacked a Jew. How many times have they stabbed us, shot us, drove into groups of Jews waiting at bus stops? The Arabs are a very violent nation, and not only towards us, but among themselves.
שתוליכנו לשלום ותצעידנו לשלום ותגיענו אל מחוז חפצנו בשלום ותן חיים ותן תקווה שתאיר לנו את הטוב הבא שיחזיר לנו את אשר קבע גם אם סגרנו תיפתח עלינו תקווה ותן חיים ותן אהבה גם לשבור שבא לבבות לזרוע למודת קרבות לטוף את הבוער שם מעבר לגדר היה שומר ותן חלום לחיים ולשמחה ולשלום במחילה קרובה אל הטוב אל הטוב הבא שים לנו אור על גוף וקצף על פני
Israel is located in one of the most volatile areas in the world. Israel is an island of stability in a sea of war and unrest. In the midst of this turmoil, Israel stands out as a beacon of order and human progress. Each week we update you on what's happening in this, the Jewish state, a true light unto the nations. This is Jay Shapiro. Join me every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
So, significantly, in this Martin Peretz op-ed in the chronically anti-Jew New York Times, he licensed himself to kvetch about Israel and its odious new nationality law, but not one sentence about any alternative to what he calls the failed West Bank model. There is no West Bank model and never was. Someone who attempts to understand the situation here like him, using the terms West Bank, Palestinians, settlers, cannot possibly see reality as it is. There is no West Bank. These people aren't Palestinians. They're Muslims. And these settlers are just Jews. There is no West Bank model. Things are the way they are because this is how life has evolved, marched on, event after event, heavily conditioned in reaction to the barbaric cruelty of these Muslim Arabs whose religion is as hateful of Jews as National Socialism, as Roman Catholicism in its heyday. Just this last week, a former prime minister of Jordan, only one of two of the 21 Arab states that has signed peace with Israel, said that when Jordan grows stronger, they will capture Haifa. Between 1949 and 1967, the ceasefire lines between Israel and our Arab neighbors were porous, commonly penetrated by Fedayeen terrorists with murder in mind. And in the 1967 war, the Jordanians joined the other Arab states in a second collective effort to destroy our little country. Self-defense, we drove the Arab Muslims from the high ground of Judea and Samaria, and ever since, there has not been even one day when a sober Israeli could make the case it was time to retreat and return the high ground that we took. Not one day since June 1967 in which there were reliable signs and indications of a desire for peace on the other side, and the belief that peace is just around the corner if we would only retreat from Judea and Samaria. In my own case, I was for retreat. For the first dozen years after the Six-Day War, I was opposed to the national religious community building new settlements. What did I know? But then, thanks to the Iran hostage crisis of 1979, I became swept up in learning a lot about the Arabs, about Islam and the Jews living within it. As a journalist, I visited a third of the Arab countries, and one result of my research was a complete about-face in the matter of Judea and Samaria. Not for years, even ages to come, if ever, will the Arabs be ready for peace, regardless of the fate of Judea and Samaria. And in that case, you do not surrender this crucial topographic barrier defending the center of this tiny country. And because you cannot retreat, and you have the law and morality on your side, you declare the spoils of war to be yours in perpetuity. You annex and incorporate what is rightfully ours. The land is immovable versus the people who are. Indeed, counterintuitively, in our degenerate age, that kind of stiff-necked insistence on our rights is likely to be the only way to peace. Self-respect. Peace will come when the Muslims are made to accept that we have the right to live free of their tyrannical culture. We have the right to be a free people in our ancient homeland and not live as we did for 14 centuries, as dhimmi, under the Muslims, an oppressed and humiliated second-class community that had to pay for the right to believe in and practice our religion. So long as Islam is formally and officially as hostile to Jews as it has always been, there will be no peace for Israel, which, by the way, is not the end of the world. The first three departments in the United States government created under the new constitution that kicked in the year 1789, one was the War Department, because those wise framers knew that independence did not mean peace, but just the beginning of a never-ending war to remain free. We began with the proposition in this podcast that we are a unique people and make unique contributions to world culture, one of them being the advent of the Messiah. Peretz, like trendy leftists in Israel, mocks us religious Jews in Judea and Samaria for believing in the messianic mission of resettling Judea and Samaria, when in truth, as usual, he who insults the Jews with lies is the one guilty of the charge. There was no greater messianic movement in history. And I include the Sabbatean fiasco of the 17th century with its false messiah. Nothing greater than the Oslo peace process, envisioned by that self-styled visionary Shimon Peres, who with Yitzhak Rabin was one of the most uneducated Jews in history, infatuated with the crackpot theories of Marxism. Have there ever been in Jewish history greater messianic dreamers of peace and then the Jewish left in the Oslo years, thinking their big idea would result in peace? It will be 25 years and a week and a half since the truly odious handshake on the White House lawn between Peres and Rabin, Arafat and Mahmoud Abbas. Yuck. It's the Israeli left that has been the most messianic political enterprise in Jewish history. By contrast, we settlers in Judea and Samaria are the most realistic and down-to-earth of Jews. Israel cannot surrender these hills. Israel has the right to own them and live in them. Anyone like a Dershowitz or a Peretz who denies this to Israel is plain and simple an anti-Jew. Speaking before of living as dhimmi under the Muslims and having to pay the humiliating Jizya tax for the right to practice Judaism, last Tuesday at midnight, some 750 Jews wanting to visit the tomb of Joseph the Righteous, one of the most amazing Jews in history, a model for a Messiah, which tomb is located in Nablus, the Arabs' mispronunciation of the city of Neapolis built by the Romans. The Palestinians never built any city in this country. And the Jews going to pray had to be protected by Israeli soldiers as they traveled toward the tomb in an armored bus that cost about $500,000 to armor, to defend it, protect it from being hit by Arab bullets, grenades, artillery shells. During their prayers, a Molotov cocktail was thrown at the soldiers. No injuries, thank God. At another point, an Arab vehicle appeared to drive at the soldiers, who fired in self-defense. And I ask, what would be the response of the world, of the Jewish left, if a band of Jewish zealots ambushed Muslims on a prayer Friday on their way to a mosque? The world would go crazy. We have to deploy armed soldiers and spend money armoring buses in order to visit one of our religious sites, thousands of years old, and not a word of protest is heard from the enlightened, from the UN, from the UNHRC. If Jews were the perpetrators of such an act against Muslims, they would be slandered as Islamophobes. The homicidal Hamite who threw that Molotov cocktail will never be called an anti-Semite. He's an ancient Palestinian freedom fighter. And never mind that when Arabs were murdering Jews here in the 1930s in the so-called Arab Revolt, it wasn't yet called the Palestinian Revolt, there was no such country, they said, called Palestine. Jews are under attack in lots of places these days. Last week, the Jewish Telegraph Agency reported that Jewish members of British Labour, the party, attending, I assume, the annual upcoming party conference, will be provided with bodyguards to protect them from fans of Jeremy Corbyn, fans within the party. This is getting to be like the 1930s in Europe, where Jews were frequently the target of hooligans in the streets, random attacks, only now inside a Labour Party convention. There is fear that fellow members will attack fellow members who are Jews because they don't like Jeremy Corbyn. But what really had me worried was the Labour Party's official response to Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, the great Lord Sacks, who issued a clear condemnation of fellow Brit Corbyn, calling him an anti-Semite. He rightly said Corbyn has, quote, given support to racists, terrorists, and dealers in hate who want to kill Jews and remove Israel from the map, close quote. He said Corbyn's 2013 speech, which the Daily Mail discovered, implying Jews are not Britons, was, quote, divisive, hateful, depicting an entire group of British citizens as essentially alien. He said this is the language of anti-Semitism in the 20th century. The Labour Party called the rabbi's remarks, this was frightening, absurd and offensive. Jeremy Corbyn is determined to tackle anti-Semitism within the Labour Party and its wider society. Close quote. Yeah, right. The denial here is as shocking as anything Corbyn has ever said. He's a mental case like David Irving, but one would hope the spokesman for the Labour Party would not say such a dishonest thing. Let's hope and pray that we are living through a mild relapse of anti-Jew delirium and the worst of the haters are really a very small minority, though J.K. Rowling of Harry Potter fame is worried enough about her country to have gone public with her fears of the rising tide of anti-Semitism. Okay, that's it for this week's edition of Phantom Nation, named for the book of the same name, an atomic bomb of a book available on Amazon or on order through your bookstore. Once again, today's music was by Heart and Well. They'd also do the intro music. That's Carmina Orr and Hilik Frank. And music by Yossi Azulai. And then, as always, Yosef Karduner. Until next time, I'm Shai Bentekoa.
אחת שאלתי מאת השם אחת שאלתי אותה אבקש שיבתי בבית השם כל ימי חיי שיבתי בבית השם כל ימי חיי לחזות בנועם השם ולבקר בהיכלו לחזות בנועם השם ולבקר בהיכלו Thank you.
Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. Just click the orange button at the top of the IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com homepage, log in as yourself or an anonymous guest, and join in on the fun. You'll meet other listeners from all over the world who listen to Israel News Talk Radio, and you can make new friends. Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. It's the closest you can get to being in the studio with us.
We love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candle lighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio
on
Twitter.
Opinion and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.